Welcome to the Oakcrest podcast channel. Oakcrest School in Vienna, Virginia challenges girls in grades 6 to 12 to develop character, faith, and leadership potential to thrive in college and throughout their lives. In this podcast, Laura O'Neill, Oakcrest class of 1996, and psychotherapist at the Alpha Omega Clinic, discusses ways to foster well-being and growth in helping young girls thrive. In particular, she explores the current generation of children and offers tangible tips on how parents can support their child's development.
So, I love being here. It makes me feel so good and so hopeful that there's so many beautifully engaged parents who evidently maybe are feeling really similar things. As I was just chatting with a wonderful couple whose daughter is in the sixth grade, and they're like, wow, okay, there's a lot of people here. And I'm thinking, yeah, we must be feeling a lot of similar things about where the girls are, especially like this month, like February, like January. I don't know if anybody else felt that the word like brutal comes up. Yeah, we're most brutal in some ways for some people, some of the girls. And I think when it's brutal for the girls, who else might it be brutal for? Yeah, it's like so hard, right, to be with them when you watch them struggle so much. And I find myself saying this often. It wasn't like this when I was younger. It wasn't like this. It didn't feel as difficult for so many different reasons. And I'm okay with the part of myself that's so nostalgic. And I want to invite everyone who's listening right now to be okay with that part of yourself that still draws a contrast of why it felt like you just, there was less friction when maybe you were in, you know, grade school or high school. And to acknowledge what you're noticing is real. There is more friction for them now. And this is not a root cause conversation. That's gonna be my first book. But like, this is like meeting them where they are now and acknowledging what's happening with your children in your household is probably what a lot of other people are experiencing. And every kid is unique, but there are some broad strokes that sort of apply to everyone that I feel kind of passionate about saying, don't contribute to your own upsetness but with like certain things. I have a lot of energy for this time of day. I'm not really strong. But this is such a privilege to be able to share with you, like, I feel like I'm coming to you with some insider information. Like I'm with some of these girls in such vulnerable places that I can really synthesize without revealing anything confidential what I'm really hearing. How people's hearts are really struggling and they don't necessarily know why. And there are some common things that apply to all people. Why? Because it's a human formation issue. It's not a spiritual formation issue, it's a human formation issue. So I'm gonna share with you a lot of the points that I spoke with the faculty and staff a couple weeks ago, and these are similar points, because here is what I've noticed. Has everybody had their Wheaties today? Yes? Okay, you're here, so you probably have. This generation needs mothering more than ever before. They need mothering more than previous generations. Not babying, but mothering. This is not a hit on any mother in this room, but they need more mothering. They need more calm, center in the eye of the storm, plugged into you, attuned to you, seeing you, understanding you. And that's from mom and dad. Again, this is not a root cause conversation, but I'm gonna, what I wanna say about needing more mothering is, kids do better when they feel more secure. They can access their ability to make really fine choices when they feel safe and secure, when they're not like overwhelmed with parts that are detecting threats. I'm not talking about physical threats, I'm talking about emotional threats. So back in my prior life, I worked as a nurse for almost 20 years before I became a therapist, but I had a long stint as a school nurse, and that's where my desire to become a therapist came from. Because kids would come in, and I realized, okay, you're not sick, but you're not well. So what was happening here, you know? What is going on? Your emotions are showing up in your body, I would say 8 times out of 10, And they really, they needed connection, you know? So the school nurse removes impediments to learning in the classroom. Your throat feels a little funny, cough drops, goodbye. You didn't eat breakfast, juice, crackers, goodbye. Right? You feel hungry, that's distracting you, have this, goodbye. You have a fever, good, you go home. Like removing impediments to learning. But what we spoke about, you know, 2 weeks ago with the faculty was, that's on a physical level, but on an emotional level, human formation is about like removing impediments to choosing well, to being able to access what they're naturally drawn to, the good. So, when we want to ask girls, young people, to choose well, step one, you got to make a U-turn and check you. Because your the environment, the atmosphere that you are creating, always, that's such a strong word for a therapist to say, contributes to the ability to choose well. We can't argue with the human body. It's how God designed us, that when we feel like our nervous system is regulated, we can access our reason, our intellect more, and then inform our will, right? So, when I asked the faculty and staff, how do you push girls who are in a competitive academic environment? Never mind the ones that are suffering, that we're not talking about that, people who deal with specific things, but the average kid under stress, how do you push someone under stress? Well, you make sure that the things that you are doing that you actually have within your control are dress right dress. Like, your ability to be calm, to be curious, to access your God-given compassion, your confidence, your courage, all of that, that's in you. Right now, at this moment, it's always in you. But if you can identify the parts of you that are blocking basically your access to you, to who you, your authentic self, that calm, curious, compassionate self, that's what they're beginning to recognize as like the inner leader. And when you have it, that's how they catch it. Because so, when I told the faculty and staff this last week, when I started working here as a school nurse, Christy and I, she was doing like, maybe it was like a new person orientation or something. But there was a slide that really struck me, and it said like, virtue can't be taught, strictly speaking, but it can be role modeled. Now there are some courses where they probably put virtues on flashcards and have to reproduce that information for a test. But really, in real life, people observe through really temperate role models, that's whose life I want to have. That's whose life I want to have. So fortunately here at Oakcrest, the faculty and staff, they're striving to be that calm in the center of the storm as much as they can. And so it's a big ask to always be calm and curious, and they're flipping out about things or frankly ignoring rules of the house, and you're like, I know you're not gonna be like, oh wow, this is so interesting, tell me more. Like that's not what I'm talking about, thank you. But it's expecting at this age, like between, you know, 12 and 18, what's normal to show up. And so let me tell you one thing that is normal that shows up. Counter will. Please raise your hand if you've never experienced counter will. Doesn't even need a definition, does it? It's a normal part of growth and development. And it starts when children are very young. When you ask a three-year-old, please don't do that. Please don't touch the web paint. Boom. You know, they have to do that. Their brain is forming new neural networks. And they're trying to figure out who they're attached to and how strong that attachment is. But in adolescent years, it's also part of learning how to not take influence from someone you're not attached to. Because when they move out, after being in this beautiful castle of kindness, which I know unkind things happen in the castle of kindness, by the way. I know about that. Because it's packed with humans. But when they go off into the world, we want them to be able to be like, I'm not vibing with that person. They don't have my highest good involved. They don't seem to be like the way, frankly, my parents were. Calm, compassionate, like steady. And so I don't accept their influence. So they test it out with you. They test it out with you, and that's a natural process. But if they're testing it to the point that it's constant and you can never, ever, ever get the counter will out of the conversation, they always feel like they're being coerced, and you always feel like you're raising the threat level, then we go back to make the U-turn, and we go back to the connection and the attachment. People want to be influenced by people that they feel securely attached to. So we're trying, you know, the faculty and staff are actively working on that. It starts with your physical presence, just being there, parking it in the middle of the family room with nothing else, not the book, not your phone, not anything, and just being there and letting the kids just be in your presence. It also starts with the tone of voice. Having a way to collect a child before you direct them. Like, hey, like a, instead of like, oh, good, your laundry. you know? Like, oh, they're good, you are. If there's anyone here who's got a part of you being like, dang, I did that this morning. I want you to know there's something called the golden ratio in relationships. It's also true within marriage. You can have four, you know, like one-offs, but then you gotta have one where you nail it. Okay, you know, so like, and that's true with the positive and the negative. Like, you just have to remember that it sticks in their memory when something's unpleasant, and that's also like a natural response. Okay, but you can balance that. So your physical presence, collecting them before you direct them, is one of the best ways to build routines in your family. And collect before you direct is as simple as a smile, a cute thing to say, a little catchphrase. Some families that I've observed that have some of the deepest family bond is they have a little catchphrase that they say to each other, and they're like goofy as anything, but they're like, the family gets them. It's very adorable. Also, I know you all pick beautiful names for your children, but nicknames also increase family bonding. So don't shy away from those. You know, I think kids feel really seen and known when they're called like affectionate names. Smiling a lot. Because if you smile a lot, you'll raise girls who smile a lot. And there's a lot of default, non-smiling people who have a lot on their mind. We live in an area where people do a lot of really serious work. And I don't begrudge you that it's processing through your body all, you know, all day, and you get home and you're like, what do I have to smile about? You didn't read what I read today, you know, or whatever. It's a choice to work on smiling a lot. I see people who believe they have a mental health problem because they're surrounded by people who don't smile that much. That doesn't actually meet the criteria for a mental health illness. But it feels like it does for people. Because they don't understand like what's happening, why people are just not smiling. You don't have to be like deliriously happy, but just like a default ability to smile when somebody looks at you and meets your eyes. It's okay to talk about it in a clunky way. Like, I gotta work on smiling. Like, you can just say that. It doesn't have to be like coming from this organic, natural place. It can be something that's genuinely worked on. Over-communicating. This is another way to create safety because it increases clarity. So if you have the weekend stretching before you and you know your children have homework, which is, maybe they don't have as much on the weekend, I don't know, they probably do. Saying, let's have homework by this time, and then we're gonna do this. Even if that's not your natural strong suit, but when, because when there's clarity, it 99.9% of the time it invites in calm. When there's clarity, it invites in calm. I ask the faculty and staff to start taking 60 seconds and allowing the girls to make a note on their paper, when I'm gonna do this work when I get home. Because when they mope out of the room and they're like, all right, well, it's not due now, so I'll think about it later. Like, that, where does that go? Where does that actually go? The tension just stays inside, it fills up their bandwidth, and there's way less space to choose well and respond well and access their higher level thinking. So slowing down, taking time to say, all right, Daddy and I would like to take you guys to the wherever, something beautiful and lovely. Which they may not be interested in because we need a counter will. We expect it to show up. It's unpleasant, but we expect it to show up, so we're not gonna behave like we're surprised as much anymore. And Daddy and I would like to take you to this amazing religious art exhibit. And they're like their bodies are reacting, you know, like sliding out of the chair. And then they're gonna get you with a, well, actually, I don't have enough time for that because I have to do my work. You know, my work, you know the work you want me to be doing? You know, so anticipating that before you pitch the idea, in order to not be coercive, and in order to not like have your own parts go, really, really? Well, if you've been on top of that during the week, you would have time because now we're going and Daddy bought the tickets. You know, like that's normal things that happen in households all the time. But if you can slow down and remember, clarity always invites in calmness. First we're gonna do this, then we're gonna do this. Does that sound like babying? It's not. It's not. We could never have pulled this off and gotten here on time and started on time if we didn't have clarity of what this is and what time we're gonna be here. We all need it. And that's mothering. That's having a higher tower say, I got the plan. Keep your eyes here. I got this, and we're gonna figure this out together. They need that until they don't need that. So they need it for a really long time. How many of you have people, children, that are already out of the house in college? And how many of you have ever had a phone call where they don't know what the heck to do, and they call you back, and they're like, oh, I have no idea. Like, no idea. Not even a clue what direction to head out in. Yeah, they need it for a really long time. We want our young people to collect them and direct them, we want them to actually come to us. I know that there's probably no one in this room that wants to look at their kid and go, well, you could have Googled that. Like, you could have Googled that. Like, that's like a funny little thing to think when you see something written on the internet. Like, why is this person asking this person? But that's not what we say to kids. We want them to come to us. We don't have to have every answer, but we will figure it out together. There's a steadiness and a secure attachment that they'll know like they know like they know. And then let me tell you what that will lead to. Can I just be heavy-handed? Choosing husbands that are securely attached because they'll recognize it. They will recognize what it feels like to be in a loving relationship with someone securely attached. That is the gift of a lifetime. And if it comes to removing impediments to choosing well, there are many, many things that life gets messy about, but if they recognize what it feels like to be with someone securely attached, it's priceless. And so we can work on that. Even if you're like, Laura, I'm listening to you, I'm wacky on the inside. Okay, I don't know if I'm securely attached. I got a lot going on. Like, you can make a U-turn immediately. If everything can change, like in a day, everyone knows something's, people have lived lives where everything feels like it changes in a day. Think about what one little change can do with collecting kids before you direct them. Smiling a lot, putting phones down. Okay, this deserves to be said again because it's of critical importance. Phones for kids. I'm trying to decide if I'm gonna be dramatic or not. I feel like I'm gonna quote Kathleen O'Byrne's sister, Meg, because I feel like I've heard her say this. It's good, it's really good. It's like giving them a loaded weapon. It's like giving them a loaded weapon. Are you ready for them to roll out the door with a loaded weapon? Are they ready for them to have it in their room all night? If you have a child who has reasons they need to have a phone, what would that be? Well, maybe they have diabetes. Maybe they're tracking their blood sugar on their apps. Okay, that would be a compelling reason for me, okay? It needs to not ever, 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 ever be in their bedroom at night. Kids contribute to their own upsetness by the impulsive ideas that they have in the evening. Helping kids not do that, not have that, is also a big ask of you. I so get it, how hard it is to do this. But if you have that box, I didn't bring it with me today, but if you have the technology box in your house, use it. Reward yourself when you use it 5 days in a row. Like, for real, reward yourself. Go back to old behavioral modification strategies. What would feel good for you? Take yourself to Home Goods on Friday if you use the box all week. Or do whatever it is that would be rewarding to you. To every evening when you guys come in the door, put the phone in the phone box. It is a huge ask because of the way things are today. Let's not, like, scream at the sky about how much friction there is. Let's just try to ride it a little bit better. Your kids will want the phone in the room if your phone is on your nightstand. When they see a mixed message, oh my gosh, mixed messages, oh, don't even bother if there's a mixed message. It's true, they sniff out the mixed message from 1,000 miles away. Because they're like, well, if it's so bad, what are you doing it for? You know, they think they're your equal. They sum it up really quick, and you're like, really? Because I've got control. You don't. But that doesn't work. We really have to show them. Technology is here. We have to show them. Man, I'm not ready to put it in the box yet, but boom, there I go. Look at me. I'm on a 6-day streak. Say that out loud. Be playful with it. Be, you know, try to be funny with it. Show them that this is not great. I totally want to scroll for a little while. Like, I want to sit and scroll for a little while, but you know I'm going to put it in the box. Because you guys are all home now. Just narrate your process. There's nothing to memorize here. But if it feels like, I don't feel like doing it, say that out loud. How great is that? To say, I don't feel like doing this, I'm going to do it. That's the over-communicating piece. Okay. Saying their names with a smile. That was more for the faculty. But there's nothing sweeter to the sound of the human, into the human ear than their name being spoken. And that also goes for nicknames. Unwavering belief in their goodness. Okay, so that's gonna be, this is how you kind of do a preemptive counter will is coming. I know it was not your intent. But when you silenced Dad's call 5 times in a row, he felt like that was a little rude. I know it wasn't your intent. And I know I sound like I'm fooling around when I say that. But the unwavering belief in their goodness matters to kids. Because do they not say, you always think I do that. You always think I'm never doing that. Even though they're always doing that. So it's a slowing down and just remembering to expect counter will. And one way to just mitigate it a little bit is, I know you are really trying. You could go further and say, depending, you need to kind of like vary this. You can't do it every time. You can't be a one-trick pony. You have to kind of vary this around. You are a really good person. When Dad and I asked you to not sneak out, we really mean it. What follows, you got to use that in proportion, right? So, but when the kids tell me about faculty and staff who they absolutely would do anything to be in their space here at Oakcrest, I hear the same things, and it's this is what they'll say. She doesn't assume the worst. That's what they'll absolutely say. This is a teacher who does not assume the worst. If I'm running late, she doesn't think I was messing around. She just thinks, oh, you must have gotten caught up. You must have been doing something worthwhile, but now you're here. I'm so glad you're here. And they feel that. They want to be seen as good because they are good. Not every act, action they do is amazing, but they are fundamentally good. And they, and if they are feeling like they're beginning to be seen as not fundamentally good, that provokes shame. So, helping kids feel, this is a little, but like, very, very liked by you. Because love doesn't always feel warm and fuzzy, because what's really good for them may feel like you dislocated their shoulder, because they're running towards traffic, you pull them back, the shoulder gets dislocated, well, that was love. That was love, that was courageous love. I'm stopping you from running into traffic. I'm sorry your shoulder needs to be reset now. I'm sorry you feel like it's an existential threat to your body that we took you from back, because it was always ours to start with. But interspersing it with, you are so dang likable. Like, I love talking with you, I love being with you. You are hilarious. The way you think is so cool. Like a little fascinated, a little delighted by certain things about them. And I know everyone in here knows that and feels that about their kid. But permission to also just narrate the experience. Sometimes you'll see them walk in the room and be like, dang, sometimes you blow me away with the incredibly sweet way you see things. When you do that, you also see their goodness and you speak to it, and then they can mimic it in their friendships. Then they begin to notice the subtle things in other kids. And this is like a part two to my talk that I'll do a different day, is how you get them to bust out of those friend groups that are difficult to manage, and help them see pleasant qualities in other kids that they can enjoy sitting next to other people at lunch. And it's not like, why aren't you talking to us? Because you didn't sit with us, you know? Helping them notice goodness in other people needs to be a role model. And it comes from you saying it to them first. And doing it about your other kids also in front of kids. But do make an effort to spread that around evenly. I don't know if that needs to be said. But because that is also, you get one person two or three times in a row, it may as well be a backhanded slap to the other in this time of growth and development. Because that's where the hormones really kick in. That it feels like a slight to not receive a compliment in the presence of somebody else. But if you're spreading that around and there's a secure attachment, then that's excellent. Okay. Most difficult things I find to talk about when I sit with parents individually. They can't over here. Is helping them choose friends that will help them choose well. And this is where checking yourself again, making that U-turn and realizing how do I choose friends? How do I deal with my own friendships? Do I overly, this is tough stuff. Do I overly discuss other people in the presence of my kids? Because if I do that, that's what they will do. And I have 0% judgment for anyone who overly discusses people in the presence of kids. Like 0% judgment. Because it's human nature to want to process things out loud. How many of you feel like you're an external processor? The best. Just gotta get it all out. But just keeping that in some sort of proportion, in some sort of check, is really helpful. You can even decrease that in your own life by 10%, and you will probably see more space inside of you. You'll feel more space inside of you. And if you catch yourself doing it in front of kids, not just with your husband, but like, guess what happened, my boss, or whatever. You know, you're just processing out loud. That's natural and normal. We need to ventilate what's all clogging up the bandwidth. But if you do it in front of kids, they begin to think this is what we do. And then they become what they believe are like little mini therapists, analyzing everybody. And why did she do that? I don't know. She's standing there. Why did she make this plant right in front of my face? Why did you? And if you are willing to catch yourself doing it and say, you know what? I'm over discussing this. You know what? I don't think anything else needs to be said. And just gentle with yourself. Gentle, but out loud in front of your kids. That's a really beautiful way to show, you know, perfection's not an option. It's not an option. It's not an option. We can't, it's not available this side of heaven. So, like, imperfect's the only way. We can really process improve here. We can really process improve to be like, you know what? I feel like I told you this story already. I'm gonna stop myself. And saying that out loud. Even like, no, it's fine. It's totally dramatic and interesting. Keep going, you know? That's a little bit of hit of dopamine. This is fine. I got nothing to think about. Tell me this dramatic thing. That's what the girls greet each other by saying, what's the drama? What's the drama? And I know you're probably thinking, don't tell me I don't want to know the drama. Let's not. But just letting some of it out and titrate it. Let's give this 5 minutes and then let's go outside. Let's do, you know, being willing to acknowledge the humanity of needing to vent, but catching yourself is one of the biggest things. So I hope you do this. I hope you actually have this weekend an opportunity to go off on something and catch yourself so you can have this moment in front of your kids where you say, why am I talking? What am I, this is not helpful. You know what, I don't even feel better. I feel like I'm more activated. I don't know why I'm talking. Have that moment. And I think there's a lot of freedom in realizing that this is a temptation to do it. It feels good momentarily. It doesn't solve anything. And I will add, girls who ventilate with their mom or their parents, their dad, I mean, whoever's available to listen, is a good place to ventilate their emotions. And if you feel like, no, Laura, I'm the container. She vents to me, she's not venting to the other girls, great. Let's call that what it is. Let's talk, let's say, I'm so glad I could hold all this for you. Let me know how that goes. I'm here, we can always, I'm always here to listen, don't have to solve it, you know? Yeah, that is a lot. That is a lot, wow. I'm so glad I can hold that for you. Is like, so you, the implicit message is you don't need to tell you. You're 9 best friends in your friend group. It happened. And you being here, actually being like, I absolutely get why that drove you up the wall, can often turn down the flames so they don't need to be like, it didn't happen if I don't tell my 8 best friends separately with the same amount of detail. And that is how we, I think, really help girls not contribute to their own upsetness. If you find it difficult to be calm and compassionate, like, please know that that makes you incredibly normal. Truly. And maybe some of you are like, no, actually, that's not bad. I always feel calm and compassionate around my kids. And congratulations. But if it feels sort of like, there's just so much friction. It's really difficult to get to a calm place. Then again, the U-turn is what's happening in your own bandwidth, that there's not space for this, and I don't mean this in a way, so like, if there are any protective parts of you that might feel like, I'm a little ashamed that I'm not 100% this way or that way, welcome. None of us are exactly where we're here to learn lessons. We're here to learn lessons, this is a journey. And it doesn't mean we can't have some self-improvement with our own ability to access calm. But you don't have to be like the magical wizard behind the, you know, the curtain of Oz, being like, I got it all wrapped up tight here, and I don't need to let my kids see me sweat, that's actually not critical. It's not critical. They can see you sweat, and they can hear your process and really grow and learn from it. But back to choosing friends. And I want to echo, Maureen, your article was excellent that you just had. Conspiring for the good is a real thing. To be that undercover agent, trying to not act weird, but finding good kids for your people to be able to choose well with.
Yes.
We're just going to let this lovely class move into the hallway. This is insider information.
I know. It's
inside baseball.
Our signs.
Right. So I don't care like where families come from and what they're doing really, but one of the best signs of kids that you might want your kids to be with are other families who are like, we're not doing phones. Is that direct enough for everyone? That's my best advice I could possibly give you from someone in the breach with you. Like, that is my best advice. I don't care what kind of food they eat, I don't care what kind of car they drive, I don't care if they take vacations or don't take vacations, or if mom and dad use social media or not. Families that are willing to verbalize, we're not doing phones yet. Now, if you're here, a parent of a 12th grader, that might be a little different, okay? But for younger girls, families that are willing to say, I've got muscle fatigue, I'm so tired of holding the line, we're waiting as long as possible on the phone thing, there are so many reasons, I can't actually enumerate all of them, why it's important for them to be able to be unplugged from 3 to 11. This is the shift they're on right now. This is 7 to 3. The faculty and staff at Oakcrest are deeply committed to helping the girls choose well and be spiritually formed and intellectually formed. But you're on shift 3 to 11. That's your shift. Hopefully they're sleeping from 11 to 7. But they're not, probably, if they have access to devices really late into the evening. I know it's like arm wrestling. I know they gotta get on the computer to do their homework. You know, I know there's all the things. They gotta be in group chat, get the assignments. But if you can hold this with the most love that you can, I promise you, you will draw dividends that you can't even imagine in 5 years and in 10 years from in their ability to choose well. To choose well and slow things down.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast from Oakcrest School. To subscribe to our podcast channel, visit oakcrest.org.